Welcome to Radio IQ's Virginia On Demand for this Thursday, a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bossert. The U.S. House has passed a war powers resolution that would halt military action against Iran. The vote, in which four Republicans joined Democrats, comes after a similar resolution moved forward in the Senate last month. In that chamber, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine has long been an advocate of the need for any president to get congressional approval before waging war. In a statement, Kaine responded to the House vote, saying Americans have zero interest in being dragged into another prolonged war in the Middle East. He added that a further vote on his war powers resolution in the Senate is expected soon. What happens after that vote is unclear, but it seems unlikely that President Donald Trump would support any measure from Congress that limits his authority. Roanoke City teachers, firefighters, and other public sector workers rallied in Roanoke Wednesday for the right to collectively bargain for better pay and benefits. Last month, Governor Abigail Spanberger vetoed legislation that would have allowed more public workers to organize unions to negotiate on their behalf. Roanoke Education Association board member Marcus Donner criticized Spanberger, saying teachers, aides, and other workers should be able to collectively bargain for a living wage.
A lot of people that I work with, our salaries are not good enough. You know, we got to work two jobs. We're losing time with our families to make ends meet. What we out here saying is that one job should be enough. We should be making enough salary working for the school system. That should be enough to provide for our family.
Organizers say they'll continue to work toward a state law and in the meantime try to build support and make inroads with local governments like the Roanoke City Council. This note of disclosure, the REA is a subsidiary of the Virginia Education Association, a financial supporter of Radio IQ. Roanoke was the site of an international exercise conference this week, a perfect host city for the topic, even for researchers attending and presenting.
This afternoon, we allocated the whole afternoon for activities. People are going to go hiking and go cycling, and I'm going to play pickleball.
More on that story from Mason Adams coming up in a little while. The U.S. was on the verge of eradicating measles over the last few decades, but a recent resurgence among the unvaccinated has seen it return. Central Virginia is among places facing such an outbreak, and President Donald Trump's leading health official advised vaccination at an event in Hanover Wednesday. Brad Cutner has this story.
Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. opened Wednesday's press conference with a tribute to Central Virginia.
I grew up here in Virginia. I was a 4-H kid. I went to law school in Albemarle County.
And while he was there to discuss issues faced by Virginia's cattle industry, he also answered questions about the growing outbreak of measles in a region he once called home. He said the U.S. was not unique for having such an outbreak.
So that's happening all over the world because, as I say, a global measles outbreak. At CDC, we encourage people to get their measles vaccination. That's the best way to prevent yourself from getting measles.
According to the Virginia Department of Health, there were no cases of the highly contagious respiratory virus reported in 2025, though 77 cases have been reported this year. Over 80% of those diagnosed were unvaccinated, and more than half of all Virginia cases were found in and around Buckingham County. Charlottesville Senator Cree Deeds' district is just south of Buckingham.
We have to get people vaccinated, as many as possible. You know, herd immunity is the only thing that's going to defeat the measles.
The vast majority of cases reported across the country last year also involved folks who weren't vaccinated. Of those, three people died. There have been no deaths linked to the virus in Virginia. In Richmond, I'm Brad Cutner.
This week marks the beginning of the Atlantic hurricane season. And Governor Abigail Spanberger says now's the time for Virginians to be prepared. That preparation should include an emergency kit with enough food, water, medications, and other supplies to last at least 3 days. The governor says Virginians should also prepare their homes, cleaning out gutters and securing outside furniture in the event a strong storm rolls through.
We might need to also cover doors or windows depending upon the severity of a storm, so making sure that we think through and are prepared to do that in the event that we need to. We should also be checking our carbon monoxide detectors, batteries, before a storm is ever on the radar.
The season runs through the end of November, but the peak is typically from mid-August to mid-October. Virginia's revenue outlook has significantly improved with a projected $1.5 billion increase over the next three fiscal years. Governor Spanberger recently released the updated forecast to provide lawmakers with the most current economic data as they continue state budget negotiations. The revised projections estimate around $586 million in additional money for fiscal 2026 and an additional nearly $923 million combined for 2027 and 2028. State finance officials hope these new resources will help break the ongoing legislative impasse over data center tax incentives and spending priorities before the June 30th deadline. June 6th is the 82nd anniversary of D-Day, but Saturday will also mark the 25th anniversary of the National D-Day Memorial in Bedford. All Things Considered host Craig Wright has details on the weekend of events.
As we approached the beach, the ramp was lowered. Mortar and artillery shells exploded on land and in the water.
The account of the landing on Omaha Beach from Sergeant Bob Slaughter, founder of the National D-Day Memorial, taken from When We Went In.
The noise was deafening.
Originally produced for the memorial's 80th anniversary in 2024, the multimedia presentation returns Friday night, June 5th. Angela Lynch of the D-Day Memorial Foundation says it's just one highlight of this weekend's planned events.
This is the big projection mapping show where we're literally showing a film and using the arch and all of the monument as the backdrop, telling the D-Day narrative through imagery and firsthand accounts from the people who were actually there.
On Saturday, the traditional ceremony takes place, and the keynote speaker will be Drew Dix.
He's actually the first person ever from the U.S. Army Special Forces to have received the Medal of Honor and will be on hand to help us dedicate our Medal of Honor plaque in addition to giving the keynote address.
Lynch says the combination of June 6th falling on a Saturday, along with the memorial's 25th anniversary, as well as the nation's 250th anniversary only a month away, has anticipation building. In Bedford, I'm Craig Wright.
You'll find a link to the D-Day Memorial's full schedule of events on our website, radioiq.org. Researchers in Alexandria are uncovering a bit of history from Martin Luther King's time as a civil rights leader. Michael Pope is at the Virginia Theological Seminary with this report.
The red archival binder is tucked in a preservation box. Seminary archivist Denton Waits flips through the plasticine sleeves.
What I'm holding here is a relatively recent discovery of an early draft of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham City jail.
The rare 11-page document from 1963 was discovered last month by an intern. What was your reaction when you saw this?
I screamed.
That's Riley Temple, curator of the African American Episcopal Historical Collection. He says the scream sounded something like this.
Ah! And I think my hand was shaking, actually. And then Denton began to say, I said, where did we get this? And that's when the story emerged about the papers of the Right Reverend John Burgess.
That would be the Bishop of Massachusetts. The letter was discovered in his papers. Here's Archives Assistant Kayla Floyd.
For me, especially as a young Black woman, it was really powerful for me to get my hands on a document of someone saying why it's important to fight for justice and to pursue justice.
The folks at the seminary plan on putting the letter on display at the Bishop Payne Library in Alexandria. Reporting from the campus of the Virginia Theological Seminary, I'm Michael Pope.
Researchers from around the world gathered in Roanoke this week for a conference on the science of exercise. Mason Adams was there.
The International Biochemistry of Exercise Conference first gathered in 1968 in Belgium. Since then, it's convened 20 times, including three times in the United States, Boston in 1982, Little Rock, Arkansas in 2000, and this week in Roanoke. Tom Rando is director of the Broad Stem Cell Research Center at the University of California at Los Angeles and was one of the conference's keynote speakers.
It's a tough time to be a scientist in the U.S. right now. There's a lot of reduction in funding, a lot of threats to the future. But, you know, this always gives everybody optimism that it's still worth doing, and you meet with people who are enthusiastic about the work. It keeps us all going.
Landing the conference at the Hotel Roanoke and Conference Center was a coup for the Fralin Biomedical Research Institute. And it pays off on the Institute's successful 2022 effort to lure internationally renowned researcher Zhen Yan away from the University of Virginia to launch its Center for Exercise Medicine Research.
It's very important to put us on the map, competing with many institutions and the research entities.
Yan says the conference shows the progression of exercise medicine, which long focused on macrophysiology, and in particular muscles and the cardiovascular system. Now, researchers are looking at how exercise affects everything from stem cells to brains. Christina Hugenschmidt, associate professor at Wake Forest University School of Medicine, spoke on how the brains of aging adults are affected by dance.
I've been kind of blown away by the level of science that's happening and all the discussions about different biomarkers and how exercise changes every tissue in your body.
That's part of what drew Eddie Rogowski, a PhD student in translational biology, medicine, and health in Zhen Yan's lab.
I guess I just want to comment on the exercise field really shifting from mostly focused on the heart and muscle to now really opening up to every organ system. And especially with my interest in the brain, it offers an opportunity for me to have a foot in both worlds.
Broad Center Director Tom Rando says those conversations are the real draw of this conference.
That's kind of a reason I think that we go to conferences, is not just to hear the talks, it's to meet the other investigators. It's to have talks offline. What are you working on? We should collaborate in this. Here's your expertise. Here's my expertise. Can we put this together? In many ways, that kind of offline conversation is more important even than the formal presentations of the posters.
The researchers weren't just discussing exercise, but participating in it too. Turns out, Roanoke's a pretty great place for that. Zhen Yan again.
This afternoon, we allocated a whole afternoon for activities. People are going to go hiking and go cycling, and I'm going to play pickleball.
Hugenschmidt says researchers at the International Biochemistry of Exercise Conference are digging far beyond the idea that exercise is good for you.
The kind of questions that people have, like how much should I exercise? When should I exercise? How does exercise affect my muscles and my blood sugar and my longevity? All of those kind of questions are what the scientists here are asking. To have that right here in Roanoke, Virginia is pretty exceptional.
The conference concluded Wednesday, but many participants are sticking around the rest of the week for a post-conference course at the Fralin Biomedical Research Institute. In Roanoke, I'm Mason Adams.
Note of disclosure, Radio IQ is a service of Virginia Tech. Warm and sunny for the next few days. Sunny today, highs climbing into the upper 70s to upper 80s across the listening area, around 84 for Blacksburg, 88 the high for most in areas east. Mostly clear tonight, relatively mild, lows in the mid-50s and low 60s. Sunny tomorrow, a little breezy, warmer yet. Highs around 80 in parts of the southwest to 94 for the Danville area. Fairly sunny Saturday, a little breezy. Highs in the low 80s to 95 for Danville. Thanks for listening to Virginia On Demand. A little reminder, subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bosser.